very good at looking this tape. I've been fooling around with it for a while and getting all crossed up. I borrowed this tape, incidentally, from my son, who's a National League umpire. I wish he was on this instead of me. But anyway, get back to your questions. First, you'd like to hear about my career in baseball. Well, it's been a long one. This is my 58th year in baseball. I signed my first contract in 1923. And I was only a kid in high school then. I signed with the San Francisco Seals and played the last five games of the Pacific Coast League that year. I think I was only about 17. But it was quite a thrill to get in the Grand League. Coast League was a tough league, and a lot of ex-major leaguers were in it, a lot of experience and great ball players. Some of them going up, some of them coming down. So anyway, in 1924, I went to spring training with the Seals, and I had a pretty good spring, and I hoped they would send me out to the pro league, but they didn't have any place to send me, so they told me. They wanted me to go to a semi-pro league and sign me to a contract for 1925, but I refused that condition. So anyway, in 1925, I went up to Samoa and played the Humboldt League. And at the end of that season, I came home and signed a contract with the Pittsburgh Pirates. They took me to spring training at Paso Robles. That was really a thrill to play with and against spring training games against guys like Pike Trainer, Glenn Wright, Akai Kyler, and other great stars. Pirates had a great club that year. They won the pennant in 25. And anyway, when we broke spring training camp, Collins and Martinek were on the train going back east with me, and they decided to send us all to Johnstown, Pennsylvania. So we went down to Johnstown, and Norman McNeil is the manager there, and he was really a fine fellow, a good baseball man. I enjoyed playing for him. Very patient and understanding, and we were a bunch of firebirds and bunch of young kids. So anyway, in 25, I had a fair year. I didn't hit too much, but I was the best third baseman in the league, fielding average-wise. But I only hit around 248. And the next year, the Pirates sent me to Williamsport for spring training, and I had a terrible spring. I just couldn't do anything right. So I played there about 8 or 10 games, and they finally released me. So I called Norman McNeil up back to Johnstown, asking for a job. He says, come on back, and I did. And I signed with the condition that I would get my free agency at the end of the season. And I had a pretty good year that year at Johnstown. I think I hit 315. And I got my release at the end of the year. That winter, I signed a contract with the New Haven club of the Eastern League. George Weiss, who owned the club, later became general manager of the Yankees, he sold me to the Cleveland club. And in 1928, I reported spring training with Cleveland. I had a very impressive spring, third base. I could really handle the glove. But I wasn't a big kid. I only weighed, I think I was 5'10 and a half, weighed about 150 pounds soaking wet. In the middle of the summer, I'd probably get down to 145. So the strength wasn't there, but I was eager and hustled a lot. So anyway, I played a little bit in 1928. Not too much. Did a lot of pinch running. And I think I got in 32 games. I've got a record here for my playing career. Don't look too good to me. Not so bad anyway. So, 29, spring of 29 in February, I was operated on for a kidney stone, and I went to New Orleans for spring training about March the 4th. I think the club was still open, and the Cleveland club thought they'd better leave me at New Orleans when the weather was hot, and maybe I could recover and get back in shape again. So I played in New Orleans that year. John John is halfway through the season. He's playing pretty good ball. Slid into second base and shortstop came down, landed on my arm and my elbow, dislocated my elbow, so that put me out for the rest of the season. So I only played 84 games at 29. And so the next year, I went back to New Orleans again. Did pretty well. I had a pretty good year there, and at around 280, and the Cleveland club called me back up in the middle of the season. So I was in Cleveland in 1930, half of the season, and hit around 250 to 60. And the next year, I had a pretty good year. I hit 285 at Cleveland. But they got a kid from Toledo named Knickerbocker, who they thought was going to be a great one, so I was included in the trade to Toledo. Well, I'm back to the minor leagues again. Well, that was all right. I played at Toledo in 33, and then 34, I had one of my better years in baseball. And I thought, sure, that maybe the big league would find me back again, some club. But about the first week in September, I was getting awfully tired. As I say, I was only 150-pounder. My manager, Steve O'Neill, he asked me all the time if I wanted to rest. And I said, no, I'm all right. I'll be all right. I hate to get out of the lineup. Well, I won 32 times at bat without a face hit. My average dropped from 333 to 301, which I finished up with 301. So I guess when I was in that swamp, the scouts must have been looking at me, and they forgot all about me when they saw that swamp I was in. So anyway, the next year, 35, I went to Montreal, and I didn't do too well there. I was a utility man. And the next year, they sold me to Columbus, and I went to spring training with them, got three games, and they sold me to Dallas. So I was really on a Cook's tour. I never played very much there. And then I got my release at Dallas. I asked for it. I said, I want to play back in the coast. So I signed with Seattle in the Pacific Coast League. And they made a deal with Portland for me in the middle of the year. Because Portland had a second baseman that got hurt. And I never played second base in my life. I always played third and short. If I'm not at Portland, and I get back to my knee, and I'm out the rest of the season there. So, following year, I had a bad knee. I don't know whether I cracked something or what. But the next year, I signed with Portland, had a good spring, and they made some kind of a deal with Oakland. So I wound up with Oakland. Now, this was my last year as a player. I played 156 games with Oakland that year. And in fact, I made a record for shortstops in that league. There was only two shortstops in the league history that ever handled more than 12 assists in a game. I was one of them. So at the end of the season, I decided I'd like to try managing. So I went to Shelby, North Carolina, and managed one year. And I didn't like that at all. I used to take the game to bed with me at night, and I was drawing up lineups half the night and going to sleep, and I just wasn't built to be a manager. So that was the end of my managing career and the end of my playing career. So in 1940, I was out of baseball. 1941, I signed a contract to scout for the Boston Red Sox. I scouted the Southeast Territory. I only signed three ball players. One was Mel Parnell, Virgil Stalltuff, and Tom Wright. And all three ball players got to the big league. Parnell became a very good pitcher in the big league. And at the end of the season, the Red Sox let me go. So, well, anyway, I had to scout around for another job, so I got a job with the New York Giants as a scout for Southeast. Bill Terry was a farm director then, and he told me to go and scout the Southeast, and I covered the whole area down there. And then the war came on, I enlisted in the Army, and I was close to 38 years old then, but I went in as a volunteer officer candidate. Passed everything all right, and the lieutenant says, oh, you're too old for the war, so I got released from the Army. Well, they had to let me go because I was a volunteer officer candidate. So anyway, I was out of baseball in 43 and 44. And then in 1945, the Giants sent me a wire and asked me if I'd consider going back to the Southeast. Incidentally, I came home to San Francisco. So they asked me if I'd go back to the Southeast and scout there. And I jumped at the chance. So I scouted down there in the late 40s. And in 1950, I came up with a gem. I found and discovered and signed Willie Mays. Well, that's my top performance as a scout, although I've signed quite a few players. I think I have a batting average of around 330 as a scout. At least 30% of the players I've signed, or 25% that I've signed, have reached the major leagues. So I'm still scouting. In fact, this is my 38th year with the Giants. I'm getting up there in years, but I still love the game and hope to scout as long as I can. Well, anyway, that's a long story, Jerry, and not a very interesting one, I don't think, but at least you asked for it, and I hope I gave you all the information you want. Now, to get back to second question, if you'd like to learn something about the Johnstown teams of 25 and 26, what they call the Johnnies. Yes, they were. And who do I recall as the standout players? Well, Rip Collins was a standout in the league. He could hit, he could run, he could field, he had good hands. Of course, he played the outfield, and the only thing Rip lacked, I think, was a good arm. He didn't have a very strong throwing arm, and I think that's the reason he eventually wound up at first base. But he could really play that first base, too. He should have been there all the time. In 1925, we had Martinek in first, so we got to play the outfield. Getting back to Martinek, he was a real good ball player, I'll tell you. He could hit and he had power. And he liked to play, and he was strong, a real strong kid. But he never cut all the way. He got to the high minor leagues and always had pretty good years, but he just couldn't make it as a big leaguer. But I'll tell you one thing, if he was playing today, he'd be in the big leagues. Because of all the expansion clubs, the players in the big leagues, I'd say that a great percent of them are just AAA ball players at tops. Because the AAA leagues in those days was almost equivalent to the major leagues. You'd have three or four players on every club that could probably play in the major leagues today. But Ripper, he went to Rochester after the 26th season. Had a pretty good year there, I believe. I don't know what his average was. Then he went up to the gas house gang, and he fit in perfectly with that gas house gang because Rip was a fun-loving, crazy kid. He'd pull pranks and laughing all the time and just enjoying himself. I think Rip was married at that time. He's very young when he's married, but he had a great temperament. He could hit, and he was especially tough in the clutch. He loved those men on base. And plus, at 25, Joe Cronin was one of our outstanding players. And Joe was a big, strong kid. He was about 180 pounds when he was a kid. I wish I had been as strong and big as he was. Maybe I'd have done a lot better. The kids today, now, as a scout, I see them. And boy, the kid's 5'10". He's small. But when I played ball, guys like Earl Averill and Willie Cam and all those guys, they were all 5'10 and a half, something like that. And nowadays, the kids in the big leagues, they're 6 feet is a very medium-sized kid. They're all big, strong guys. I guess it's the way they eat and vitamins and everything else that we didn't get when we were kids. Now, let's see. You also asked me about the Johnstown ballpark. Well, we played in the Ideal Stadium in 1925, but when I went back to Johnstown in 1926, we played at the Point. And the postcard you sent me is the same ballpark, because we didn't have the lights then, played an all-day ball. And getting back to how we travel and everything, we rode by bus. And I think Johnstown was probably on the perimeter of the entire league, because some of the trips we made were 8, 9, and 10 hours. It seemed like we were riding all night, playing all day. I remember one time we got into the town of Fairmont about 8 o'clock in the morning and had a doubleheader starting at 10 a.m. Well, we didn't get much sleep except what we could do on the bus. So it was tough, but we were young and we were eager and we didn't mind it. And it was a good league, Mid-Atlantic League. We called it Class C ball in those days. And I can't recall many of the players that came out of that league that went to the big leagues. But I remember Art Rooney, who is now the owner of the Pittsburgh Steelers football team, and his brother Dan, who became a priest later on, they played with Wheeling, West Virginia. And they were fine ball players and good, very good kids, real classy kids. And I can't remember any other guys who went to the big leagues. We had a little second baseman on the Johnstown team, and Oliveras. He's another guy that in this day of ball would have been a big leaguer. Great little fielder, great range. He'd spray the ball around. He could run. He was from Cuba, and he didn't speak English. And one thing he did learn when he came over here was to say ham and eggs, and I think he ate that 3 times a day. The time we'd go into a restaurant with him, we'd look at the menu, and he'd say ham and eggs to the waitress. So it became a joke, but he was a nice little guy. And we had Nat Hickey also, one of our outfielders. He was a great basketball player for the Celtics in the winter, played baseball in the summer. And Nat was a crazy guy, too. He was full of fun. We used to take those long rides in those buses, and we had a few pretty good voices on the team. And, boy, we'd sing half the night, and then the other half would be talking baseball and arguing about plays and rules. And it was like a classroom. We learned baseball by talking it. Nowadays, these guys, they leave the ballpark, and baseball, they don't even talk about it. And when I got to the big leagues, we rode trains. We talked baseball. We asked questions. We framed up plays. I remember Crow and I used to get together when he was playing short and I was playing third, and we'd get together about making plays, like on a bunt play. I'd go in with a bunt and he'd throw the third. And sometimes we'd get that guy at third. And we'd try to frame up plays like bluff, bunt, and steal. Guys would steal, you'd bluff a bunt, the guy would steal, you'd pull the third baseman in. And, well, anyway, it's been a great career, and I've enjoyed every minute of it. I'm still enjoying it. I'm supposed to be out scouting today, and we've got college games going on now. We've got to cover this area. So, now getting back to your other part of this question, Jerry, you asked me about the ballpark. The seating capacity, 17,000. It looks like the same ballpark to me. And our attendance, I don't know, I think we must have drawn the average around 700 or 800 a game, which is pretty good for a Class C league. And, you know, one incident I remember when we played at Ideal Park the last week of the season, we had some great fans there. We used to have infield practice. People had come out early just to see our infield. We had myself on third, Crum on short, Oliveras on second, and Mark Nick on first. And we could all handle that ball pretty good. And when we get through infield practice, we go through a few rounds of shadow ball. We call it shadow ball because we didn't use the ball. And the batting infield hitter, it's fake getting the ball, and we fake catching it, and we look great. We make some great plays. We're in a shadow ball. But anyway, the last week of the season, one of our players hit a home run, and a fan in the grandstand, or the bleachers rather, it looked like they were all bleachers. I don't think it was a grandstand then. He passed the hat. The player got about $20, I guess. And the next day, another player hit a home run. The hat goes around again, $18, $19. And the following day, I think two guys hit a home run. And of course, they had to split the first. And this went on for the whole week. And then on Sunday, the last day of the season, I was the only regular that hadn't hit a home run. And darn if I don't hit one out. And they passed the hat around, and I think I got around $80. Boy, what a ribbon I took from the players. They said, you showboat, you're waiting for the last day in the big crowd to hit your home run. Well, that was all part of the game. It was fun. Now, let's see. Number four question on Rip Collins. Was he called Rip? The baseball encyclopedia has him as Ripper. Well, we never called him Ripper. We called him Rip. I never heard anyone call him Ripper. Maybe they did. About his power as a hitter, I'd say he had average big league power, but he was more of a contact hitter, in my opinion. He sprayed the ball all fields. He got a lot of extra base hits. He had good base speed, and he was a good base runner. And his personality was outstanding, I'd say. Just great. Just relaxed and full of fun. And just as you say, fun-loving and devilish. That's the answer. Of course, I know he moved from outfield to first base. That happened in 1928. And I never had any contact with Collins after. Never saw him after that 1925 season. Never ran into him again. Of course, I was in the American League and he was in the National League. And, of course, the fifth question here about written about one of the least stresses travel. Well, as I said, we traveled by bus on long, long rides. And first, once in a while, it'd break down. And as I said before, we passed our time talking baseball and singing. And because we were on a winning club, so we had a lot to sing about. And yes, it was not quiet on the bus. You could sleep, you were lucky. Everybody was popping off and having fun and laughing. Stories. And let's see, now you asked me in question six if I recall any outstanding stars in the minors. You knew never made it to the majors. Well, I think Oliveras and Martinet were two of them. And on the other club,
Jerry, please